Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Boat Briefing. My name is Stuart Campbell, and here to help me navigate through all the news from the world of superyachting is Caroline White. Hi, Caroline.
Hi, Stu.
How's it going?
Yeah, good, thank you. How are you?
Very good. Well, I suppose we better get to the big news, the big announcement first off, and that is that Boat International Media, as of last week, is now part of the Informa Group.
Yes, Stu. So this is, certainly rocked our world here at Boat. Can you tell us a bit more about what it means?
Yeah. So the Informa Group have been a long time admirer of Boat International Media and what we do, because I think what particularly appealed to them was our interactions with the owner community, but also, you know, people up and down the superyacht supply chain, as well as things like Boat Pro, our data product, our fantastic portfolio of events, and the fact that we're growing. You know, we're a very multifaceted company. Many people associate us with the magazine, but, you know, obviously what we do in print is core and very key to what we do. But around that ecosystem are some fantastic businesses, like the event side, like the data side, like the custom publishing side and the custom event side and things like that. And so, yeah, I think we've got a clear growth strategy. Got a clear growth strategy. And Informa, we're like that very much indeed. So yeah, so we will join the group and we'll become one of 100 specialist media brands that the Informa Group has in its portfolio. We will crucially operate as an independent unit within Informa. We will retain full and complete editorial independence. Informa have no interest whatsoever in disrupting that, because it's what makes us so special. Why would they want to disrupt, you know, those key bonds Boat International has with the superyacht industry? So it's very much business as usual here at Boat. We will crack on and do what we do. But while, you know, we also have some phenomenal resources behind us. I mean, Informa Group's a huge, you know, multinational, 10 or 11 billion pound company. I mean, it's just on a scale, it's on a vast scale, a global scale. And they will certainly help and support our growth strategy while just letting us get on with the business of being Boat International, which is absolutely key. So it's exciting, really exciting times at Boat International. But I felt really guilty, actually, Caroline, because when the news kind of broke, you were in Poland. You couldn't be on the ground for the breaking news. Although you had a very lovely time in Poland, I understand.
I did. You'd sort of exiled me to Gdansk to get me out of the way. Maybe it was strategic in some way. I haven't quite worked out yet. I was in sunny Gdansk. It was actually beautiful, visiting Sunreef, who've got loads of interesting cats in build, including a 43-meter. They've got a really interesting setup there, actually. So they've got one shiny new yard and also their original yard, which is still in use. And that one sits in the middle of these partially derelict ex-communist shipyards, so really atmospheric. And I learned loads about the history of the yard. You want to hear anything about that, Stu?
Yeah, I absolutely do, because this Gdansk trip has been kind of on the cards for a little while. And Cecile was there, seeing Conrad not too long ago in the winter. Mm-hmm. And she said Gdansk is just a beautiful place. I've never been. I'd love to go. Actually, I've never been to Poland. I say that with huge guilt, considering its up and coming status in the superyacht industry. So that is a place I need to go to pretty quick spot. But yeah, Gdansk is lovely. But I'd love to know the history. Absolutely, yeah.
Well, yeah. Well, so on that note, it is beautiful, because this is terrible, but I kind of envisioned this very concrete city, which it's not at all. It's beautiful, historical, old town. Then kind of the shipyard area, because it's quite sort of the old shipyard area, because it's fairly derelict and run down and ex-communist, it's retained all of the beautiful old buildings. So actually it's kind of, you know, preserved and aspic in some ways, which is lovely. But anyway, so Francis Lapp, who's the big boss of Sunreef, started off in electrical gear. And then he personally bought a hobby cat for personal use, loved it. So he bought a couple of power cats to start a charter business. That went really well, but he didn't like the quality of the boats because he had experience of chartering really nice big monohulls with a higher quality point. So then he went to the cat builders and said, could you build me cats? Because I love cats, but with the quality of a big monohull. And they've said, basically, I'm sorry, but no. And he thought, wow, well, I think I found a niche there. And he then went on to set up Sunreef. And he's French, but because he had experience through his previous business of working with Polish kind of industry, he knew that the know-how was there to form a really high quality shipyard. So he did that basically in Gdansk, and he initially saw quite a lot of prejudice against building in Poland in the yachting industry, although some of the big European builders actually outsource parts of their production to Poland,
which is a nonsensical prejudice. Yeah. Because so many of the big custom yards start construction of their hulls in, or outsource construction of their hulls to yards in Poland and Romania and various other territories in Eastern Europe.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's it. But then, you know, what I just said when I was going to Gdansk, I was like, oh, it's going to be very concrete-y. And it's not at all. Anyway, so clearly it's still in the back of my brain. But he debuted the first Sunreef at the Monaco Yacht Show back in 2003. And that was a 74-foot sailing cat. And from there, he started to challenge that perception of building in Poland and also introduced this whole new category of catamarans, properly luxury catamarans. Now, as Stuart, you're very fond of pointing out, they're everywhere. I mean, they're everywhere. We had two on covers recently. We had Art Explorer a few months back in June, and we'll have This Is It on the September cover. Rossi Navi just launched its first hybrid electric cat, Seawolf X, a few weeks ago. So yeah, I mean, it was the start of a whole new type of boat, which is quite interesting for the industry, I think.
I also want to hat tip also to JFA Yachts over in Concarneau, because they've been building very capable motor and sailing cats for some time. And they often get kind of overlooked in the conversations about big super yacht catamaran construction, but they've been doing a brilliant job there for a long time and they're doing really well. So yeah, good on your JFA for keeping on pushing down the cat route. And they blazed a trail for lots of these yards, let's face it. They kind of proved there was a market here, and then they opened the door for yards like Sunreef to come rushing through and do phenomenally well. And that Seawolf X from Rossi Navi looks just insane. Looks so cool. I can't wait to feature that in the magazine and have a look around. Fingers crossed it will be at around the boat shows. But yeah, I mean, as we saw from the Global Order Book report earlier this year, and as I'm sure will be borne out next year, the catamaran, super yacht catamaran sector is just growing leaps and bounds every year. And we've pointed out in the past that the really interesting part of the market actually isn't over 24 meters, it's just under 24 meters, because that kind of 23 to 23.99 sector gives you lots of the volume and space of a bigger monohull, but without all the rules and regs that come with having a 24 meter LOA boat. So we're just kind of, I'm in discussions right now with Raphael about how we address that, because for all intents and purposes, they are kind of super yachts. They don't fit within the strict definitions that we have here. But, you know, should we make allowances for the fact that yards are building very, very capable, very, very nice, very, very big volume catamarans that sit just under 24 meters?
Well, that cracks open the whole volume versus length can of worms that we encounter every award ceremony. But yeah.
But, you know, I love, as you know, big advocate for catamarans. I think they are fantastic cruising vessels. It's going to be really interesting watching the, you know, marina infrastructure, or the increasingly consolidating marina sector respond. There's some marinas in the Bahamas, for instance, that are very, very well set up for catamarans. Obviously, they run big charter fleets out of there. Mediterranean, less so. So those kind of older institutional marinas in the south of France, or the Tuscan coast, wherever it might be, even over to Greece. It's going to be interesting to see how they respond to the ever more big catamarans plying our waters.
Absolutely.
We should do some housekeeping quickly, and that is to do with the Explore Yacht Summit. So some tickets have gone on sale for various of our events. So the Explore Yacht Summit, which is taking place on the 13th of November this year at the Yacht Club de Monaco. It's a day's conference with some nice drinks afterwards and some interactive elements. It'll kick off at around 9 a.m. and conclude with some drinks at about 5. It's a brilliant day. It is just a brilliant day, and it's getting better every year. And we have had, well, we've got quite a long way down the kind of content conversation. Caroline and I are pulled into all these meetings, and it's amazing how, like, the Super Yacht Design Festival, for instance, will end, and it's such a big undertaking. And then 2 weeks later, you'll get a meeting notification to discuss content for the next edition, and you kind of just want to bang your head against the wall. But it's
well, that's my signal to send all my emails 5 minutes before that meeting.
5 minutes,
otherwise nothing would ever get done.
But it's important because, you know, to get the right people in the room does genuinely take about, well, it's at least 6 months of work, at least. And for big events like the SDF, probably more like a year. So what are we going to be talking about at the Explore Yacht Summit? Obviously, we'll kick it all off with a bit of market insight. Our business editor, Gabby Lazaridis, will be on stage to tell everyone about the very latest data plucked from the Global Order Book about the expanding Explore Yacht sector. We'll be talking about the Northwest Passage, because we've just seen more and more boats are going through, basically. Compared to 10 years ago, it's been an explosion. So impacts, consequences, preservation, polar code, there's lots of things to talk about the Northwest Passage and making sure we are transiting it responsibly. We're going to talk about climate change, actually, and weather systems and how they are affecting cruising patterns for these more long-legged boats. Bit about piracy. I mean, we have to address the Houthi situation and the way boats are rerouting around Cape of Good Hope instead of going through the Red Sea. There's been quite a noticeable impact on superyacht traffic in that part of the world as a result of these attacks in the Southern Red Sea. We're going to be talking about underwater drones, living under the sea, all sorts, really. It's going to be a really fascinating day's session. So if you'd like to come along, tickets are available now on the website. Meanwhile, Caroline, it's your turn to do a plug.
So moving from the Explore Yacht Summit in Monaco to the Super Yacht Design Festival in Kitzbühel, the next edition will be held between the 2nd and 4th of February 2025, and tickets are available to buy right now. The two-day event will see some of the biggest names in design come together with experts from the wider luxury community for really exciting discussions and a brilliant social programme. Plus the Design and Innovation Awards, the Young Designer of the Year Award, and the Boat Artistry and Craft Awards, as well as the famous Ski Cup, which is held on the last day and everybody's a massive fan of, I think.
Yeah, it's the best bit because it's the end.
Well, it's because everything's over. You're kind of, the pressure's off. You've had a really exciting programme of talks, discussions, actually. But by the last day, Stuart, crucially, is off the hook, so he can just relax and have a beer. Have a ski, but it is a really fun. It's a really fun, kind of few days, I'd say.
Yeah, it's the best event of its kind. There's just nothing can compare. Lots of people, lots of designers, particularly, and people, senior executives from shipyards all over the place use it as a great excuse to go skiing. So the loads of people turn up a few days before, ski together, have a brilliant time, and then come along to the festival.
I don't know of any industry event that is so good for networking, because you're kind of, there are various points during those days where you're just mingling with the most extraordinary names in the industry, top designers, top shipyards, the top people from all of those brands, just having casual chats over coffee or drinks. It's really, you're face to face with some pretty impressive people.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. It is the best networking event.
Yeah, they can't escape from you.
And there's nowhere to go. And And, you know, it's not like Monaco where everyone's looking over your shoulder to talk to the next most important person along the queue. You know, everyone's late for meetings and you've got 5 minutes and you've got to rush off to the next one. I mean, Monaco's chaos for networking. Unless it's at 2 o'clock in the morning in a bar, it's pretty hopeless, really. But the Superyacht Design Festival couldn't be bigger, more of a contrast, really. There's time, everyone's relaxed, everyone's happy. The Alpine air, I think, it's the thin air, gets people giddy, all the schnapps, and we have some great parties. Let's not forget, the parties are tons of fun. Moving on to other Italy news, there's been a big report that I wanted to highlight put together by Altagamma, which is the Italian foundation that celebrates kind of Italian craft and luxury. So they worked with Deloitte to do this massive study on just some of the big numbers behind the Italian superyacht industry. And some of those numbers are genuinely mind-boggling. And it's quite instructive. It's a good reminder, I think, for everyone listening and for everyone in our industry to occasionally, familiarize themselves with some of the big numbers around the business. Because we often get criticized, the superyacht industry and the leisure marine industry more broadly, because people don't really understand that it is an industry, a massive employer and a massive economic contributor. And if you wanted some evidence to justify making those arguments, well, I've got them for you. The report from Deloitte and Altagamma says that the economic impact of Italy's yachting industry is approximately 27 billion euros per year. And it supports directly 157,000 jobs. The yachting industry grew three times faster than Italy's GDP between the years of 2012 and 2022. So it is a booming part of the industrial.
So what kind of size bracket are we talking here in terms of yachts?
The works. Yeah, not solely super yachts. It is looks across the entire sector. But it did make the point that the high-end yachting sector, defined in their report as large yachts over 18 meters, represented 65% of the industry's total economic impact, but as 80% of the upstream value, as in new build yacht production. So the bigger stuff is the bulk contributor to these figures. Bigger stuff, bigger margins, bigger profits, et cetera, et cetera. So that kind of makes sense. Bigger unit prices, all that kind of stuff. So the study pointed to the development of ports and marinas as one of the main opportunities for growth within the sector. I think that's true for a lot of territories in the Mediterranean with a slightly older marina infrastructure. There's, getting a new marina built, as we all know, is an absolute nightmare. The environmental and planning rules and hoops that you have to jump through are very tiresome and endless, but they're important, obviously. So getting new marinas, kind of getting spades in the ground, is very, very difficult and takes a long, long time. But based on the findings of Altagamma and Deloitte, only 30% of available berths in Italy are located in marinas with the proper technical and hospitality infrastructure for hosting yachts and super yachts.
So it sounds as if things are going pretty well. So sorry to be quite basic here, but why should Italians want to change that? What more could they get out of the yachting industry?
I mean, one of the big things is they need to get more big berths, boats berthing in Italy. Okay. And they need to improve the attractiveness of the Italian flag was one of the key findings from the report. So the analysis revealed that a large yacht registered in Italy, crewed by Italians, cruising the nation's coasts for at least 10 weeks of the year, would generate an average annual contribution of 1.6 million euros. But only 6.5% of superyachts 24 meters and above are currently registered under the Italian flag. So there's going to be some lobbying, I expect, to come for the Italian government to make the Italian flag a bit more attractive. And the report also stressed that the need for greater investments in the nation's port infrastructure and related services. So there's opportunities in the marina sector. We need more marinas capable of berthing larger yachts with all the associated services that they need, and the Italian flag needs to be a bit more attractive to Italian yacht owners. So it's a fascinating report. It's a really, really interesting one. So I'd urge you to have a look at it. We've done a story about it online, so we'll put the link, obviously, into the description. But it also got me thinking about a recent report I recall seeing from the British Marine, it used to be called the British Marine Foundation. But it also got me thinking about another report I saw from the representative body for the UK's leisure marine industry, British Marine. So this report looked at everything from kind of, you know, engine servicing of canal boats in the Midlands to glossy new sunseekers emerging from sheds in pools. So this report from British Marine estimated the economic contribution of the UK's leisure marine industry is 17.38 billion. And they reckon 38,336 people were directly employed in the leisure marine sector in the UK. This was released in April, I think, this report. So again, you can find that online. But between the two of them, I mean, it's just deeply impressive what these industries contribute to the economies of their countries. They are important. They are growing, obviously, and outpacing many other industries and sectors. They're vibrant, and they are criminally underlooked by central governments, which is something that constantly drives me crazy.
If you'd just been voted Prime Minister rather than Keir Starmer of the UK, what would you do for the UK yachting industry?
Well, I'd make sure, for one, that often, you know, when we send trade delegations out to, you know, Asia, the Middle East, Australasia, where India, wherever it might be, the UK yachting sector has to have a seat at that table. It has to be represented on these trade missions. I would make sure that every government minister had a good handle on the economic contribution of yachting. And obviously we have a Labour administration now, so I don't imagine Keir Starmer's about to go down to Poole and, you know, be photographed on the aft deck of a Sunseeker or a Princess down in Plymouth, which is, you know, in some ways is a shame, but I understand the optics of it might not be appealing to him. But, you know, it's no joke. These industries are really, really important for the economies of these countries. So it behooves the Prime Minister and his administration to pay a lot of attention to it and make sure they are being very friendly to the industries that contribute so much to the economy. It's just madness not to. It is madness not to. Especially, I mean, people always complain about the declining industrial economy that is the UK. Well, we've got some amazing, amazing manufacturers in this country and in Italy. I mean, Italy, by far and away, the biggest manufacturer of leisure boats globally. I mean, then they can't even be touched. In fact, there's going to be a Boat Pro Insight report published very soon online, which just underscores how far ahead of everyone else Italy is. And I'll get off my soapbox now. But
I'll vote for you next time.
Thanks. Boats for everyone. That's my policy.
Oh, great. I'll definitely vote for you.
Why don't we talk? Well, let's talk about a boat for you, Caroline. Let's go on to brokerage pick.
Yes, I've decided which boat I'm going to buy this month, and that is Emerald. I don't know if a few listeners might recognise the name. She's a really beautiful, rebuilt 50-metre Fed ship that we covered in our refit issue in November last year. She was delivered by the Dutch yard in 1990 and underwent an extensive rebuild after her current owners bought her in 2021. Her original exterior and naval architecture were the work of De Voogt Naval Architects, and Mulder Design is responsible for the new design. Her rebuild at Bulk Shipyard was finished in 2023, and she has a completely new interior by Design Unlimited, while the hull extension created a huge aft main deck space, a really spectacular exterior areas, particularly for a slightly older boat. She also had a complete exterior repaint in Orion Green. It's a really beautiful shade of sort of deep dark green.
The hull's just a great color.
Yeah. I feel ridiculous saying, like, oh, it's just got such a beautiful hull. It feels like such a shallow thing to notice, but it really is a beautiful.
It's the first thing you see, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, you see emerald in a marina or out in an anchorage, and you just zero in on that hull. It's a great, it is a great looking hull. Not tried at all. Absolutely legitimate thing to say.
Okay, thanks, boss. Well, she also has new exterior layouts and an upgraded technical systems for those looking beneath the surface. She's got a top speed of 14 knots and she can cover an impressive range of 6,200 nautical miles at 11 knots. She is asking €25 million with VAT paid with TWW Yachts.
She's a beautiful boat, Emerald. Really comprehensive refit. And we featured her in the magazine not too long ago.
Yeah.
So again, we should put the link to the story we did in the description. But lovely owners, they, you know, spent a lot of time making sure they got exactly what they wanted. And beautifully done by Balk in the Netherlands. Yeah, really just a beautiful, classic fed ship. Can't go wrong. Literally cannot go wrong. You know, that's my qualified point of view.
So, Stu, what's your brokerage pick of the week?
So I've gone, this just landed, this story, we're recording this on Wednesday, and this story landed on our news desk yesterday. It's Here Comes the Sun. The big 89 meter from Amals. She has been listed by Burgess asking €199 million or around €67,000 a gross ton. So there's a number of reasons I have selected this boat from 2017. Number one, one of the brokers on the listing is Ian Sherwood, and I have played cricket with Ian a number of times. So big tick there.
So much editorial integrity going on here.
So much integrity. It's ridiculous. Number two, a few years ago, it came to London and I had a good look around her with none other than Tim Haywood, the yacht's designer. We then had a very nice lunch nearby with the captain and Vanessa, Tim's wife. Obviously, two great reasons there. And number three, it's got a really lovely blue hull. Yours has got a lovely green hull. Mine's got a lovely blue hull. Is it a royal blue? What's a royal blue?
So royal blue is a bit brighter than a navy.
Okay. So I think this is pretty navy. It's a navy blue.
Okay.
Which is the best color.
Okay.
But quite apart from my outrageous biases, it's just a lovely boat. They bolted on a 6 meter extension a few years ago, which stretched the lines and actually really improved them, because it was a lot of boat in kind of 83 meters and it looked quite stacked. What that 6 meter extension does is just kind of, you know, just stretch it out really nicely. It just gives a slightly more elegant profile. The interiors are lovely, done by Winch Design, very calm, great beach club. There's loads of pedigree involved in this project, so yeah, again, cannot go wrong.
I wrote a feature on her back in 2017, much closer to her launch, and I remember visiting her in Mallorca, then going for a sail with Andrew Winch on his Geno 64. So I've got my own I was also completely undermined. She was a really beautiful yacht, as you say, so they didn't really need to do that. The most surprising feature I remember was this open kitchen on the bridge deck. So you could sit outside as a guest, having your lunch on the aft deck, and have a chat with a chef who was in a proper kitchen, but the kitchen's just sort of open to the table. It was a really nice setup.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah. So
the dining arrangements on superyachts is something I obsess about quite a lot. So I was on King Benji not too long ago, the new Dunya Explorer, and what they've done on that boat. So a lot of the meals aren't taken at kind of a formal dining room. They're taken at this kind of sit up, not quite bar, but like, you know, it's raised seating in a higher table. So it feels a bit more informal and you look right into the kitchen. So the chef's in there, you know, cooking up a fantastic meal. You see all the action, and then the you know, the plates are served in quite an informal fashion on this kind of raised dining table. And similarly on Here Comes the Sun, it feels a bit like that might be the vibe they were going for as well. And on other boats, you kind of have these, you know, the outside grill, but not just not a grill. There's a whole big teppanyaki plate and you sit around in a semicircle. I love teppanyaki. So again, it's quite an informal way of eating a meal. But when I walk on boats sometimes and you see these, you know, vast, very formal boardroom like dining rooms, I think if this was my boat and this is my family boat, I'm never eating at that table. What a wasted room. I am never, ever, ever sitting around a huge formal dining table with my family. I couldn't imagine anything more excruciating or boring. So when I obviously come to build my own boat, Caroline, it's all going to be about kind of high tables and more informal eating. Obviously, there's got to be kind of an outside space when you've got guests on board, but I think that's an outside thing. An inside formal dining room, I don't get it at all. I guess it's all about what, you know, if you use your boat for business a lot, maybe. But why would you have it otherwise?
Yeah, I mean, there's so much more you could do with that real estate. I quite like it when you see boats who've made that into, rather than having, so you've got one space essentially, part of it is often a dining room and part of it's a saloon. When you make that into a sort of dual purpose saloon, so you've got perhaps a more formal seating area for adults and then a really chilled out TV type area for the kids so that the kids can go off and watch TV while the adults are having a drink, or you can just kind of chill out in front of the TV yourself later. I think that's a much better, really simple change, but much better use of space for that space. And there's so much you could do with that area.
Yeah, 100%. And they always, I mean, one of the kind of buzzwords at the moment is multifunction, isn't it? Everyone's talking about multifunction spaces, multi-generational multifunction spaces. So it's a bit less staid, you know, the GA of, they are generally a bit less staid, modern GAs, but, you know, I still kind of feel like I'm in a schoolroom sometimes when you walk into those formal dining rooms, you think, oh God, best behavior, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Which isn't the Campbell vibe, Caroline. I've got to be honest. Anyway, so here comes the Sun. It's another huge listing, of which we have had a rash lately. In fact, all this big boat activity on the brokerage market meant the value of new listings in June soared to 1.25 billion euros. That's nearly three times the number seen in June 2023, because a bunch of big boats put on the market. So the biggest new listing in June was obviously Ocean Co's 105 meter H3, which we discussed at some length last week. But yeah, there does seem to be, there are lots of very big boats being listed for sale at the moment. So I'm gonna have a chat with a few brokers, see what's going on, because spates indicate trends. So I'd like to know what's happening. Alrighty, shall we talk through some of the big headlines? The first one's not very nice, is it? Let's face it.
No, not fantastic news. That's a fire that broke out on the morning of 2nd July at Lursen's Rendsburg facility, and it took about 20 hours after the initial incident to put it out. It began in a shipbuilding hall at 9 a.m. and apparently there were multiple explosions, flames and columns of black smoke that actually you can see if you go online and take a look at imagery. There were 400 emergency service workers, two rescue helicopters. It sounds like quite a dramatic scene. Local news reported that it began in a shed, as I said, and spread to other areas of the yard, with the roof of the hall and the facade now partially collapsed. One yacht that was under construction has also reportedly been damaged, but we haven't had confirmation on that yet. According to BoatPro, Lursen has seven yachts in build at its facilities, including 107 metre Project Icecap and the 142 metre Project Alibaba, which you may remember caused its own incident in December 2023 when it collided with a dry dock gate during a failed launch.
Yeah, really shocking incident. This never great to see. Thank God no one was hurt. And we'll just wait to see what the damage to that particular yacht was, whether it's damaged beyond repair or it can be salvaged. We'll see. I guess we'll see. We're just waiting here from Lursen. Next up, we have the news that Bonetti has announced the sale of a custom 80-meter superyacht known as Project Iron Man. Delivery is scheduled for 2028. Giorgio Cassetta penned the exterior design, and according to the yard, Project Iron Man is set to push the frontiers of design, technology, and seakeeping. Details are scarce otherwise, but we know the yacht will feature a large outdoor entertainment area, able to accommodate the owner's multi-generational family. According to Boat Pro, Bonetti has an impressive 47 yachts in builder on order. Wow. And that includes the 72-meter flagship model in its Be Now series. Very active shipyard. Congrats on this order. It's good. Well, from the very basic outline drawing that we were supplied as part of the press release, it's going to be a great looking boat. So Cassetta, Bonetti, a collaboration that is on fire right now.
Yeah,
sorry,
absolutely.
That's a terrible pun given the previous story. A collaboration that's doing extremely well.
Yeah, he is a popular man right now. So turning to Turkey, New Marine has announced that first hull in its 30XP series will make her world debut at this year's Cannes Yachting Festival. The 30.7-meter Explorer was unveiled during the Cannes Yachting Festival 2022 as the first New Marine yacht to be fitted with the hybrid propulsion. They said, "We were inspired by a sustainable Scandinavian design aesthetic which prioritizes simplicity, minimalism, and functionality." That was Chairman Omer Malatz speaking there. He said that they wanted to offer the feeling of being at home even when you're far out at sea. Accommodation is for up to 10 guests across 5 ensuite cabins, comprising 4 guest cabins on the lower deck and a master on the main deck forward. Including a proposed 55XP flagship, the 30XP brings the shipyard's range up to 7 models. New Marine is looking to increase production with a new waterside facility that's due for completion in a few years' time. In recent news, New Marine turned the hull on its flagship Explorer model, the 40MXP. The 39-meter model is characterized by her extended aft deck and glass-fronted dip pool.
New Marine, super busy shipyard. This new 30XP looks a bit different from the rest of the series. It's quite, you know, it's immediately, you know it's a New Marine when you see it, but it is a bit of a departure from the other models. So it'd be good to see that in Cannes. They're going down the hybrid route, which I think the market is demanding. So they're certainly following the market there. And yeah, I mean, New Marine, when I started in this industry, were the makers of kind of, you know, slightly flashy, swoopy flybridge, you know, cruisers. And the switch to, you know, more upright explorers with quite unique window shapes has been just phenomenal for them. I mean, that pivot couldn't have gone better for New Marine. Their range now at 7 models, and they're all selling well. They're very, very popular in Southern Florida and various other places. Yeah, great to see. Great shipyard and great flybridges, loads of space, big volume, big windows, lovely boats. Alrighty. Data. Let's talk through some data, which as ever is brought to you by Boat Pro, the superyacht industry's leading market intelligence service. So, in honor of a recent launch of the 6th AMLS 60, we're going to have a look through AMLS' extraordinary success in their kind of limited editions production. Caroline, why don't you tell us a bit more?
Yeah, so to avoid confusion, this is what used to be called an AMLS limited edition yacht, but now these boats are just being marketed as, say, the AMLS 60 or the AMLS 80. The concept is pretty genius, basically a proven hull by a big name designer, used to be Tim Hayward, now it's Espen, but with enough room for customization that an owner will feel like it's their own design. So we thought we'd give you a few numbers on these boats to give you an idea of their roaring success. So the first delivered was in 2007, and that was Deniki, a limited editions 171. And to avoid saying limited editions 100 times, I'm going to just give the number. Since then, we've had 7 171s delivered, including Deniki. We've had 4 177s delivered. We've had 14 180s delivered, four 188s delivered. The last ones were called limited editions 200. We've had four 199s delivered. The last ones were called limited editions 206. We've had three 212s delivered, one 220 delivered, seven 242s delivered, and one will be launched soon and will be delivered shortly after that. We've also had one limited editions 272 delivered. We've had five AMOL 60 limited editions delivered, one launched, and four are currently under construction. We've also got five AMOLs 80 limited editions under construction. So in summary, that's 50 delivered, two launched, soon to be delivered, and nine under construction.
Yeah, it's a phenomenal couple of decades of success for AMOLs. And that incredible collaboration. You know, there's a few designers to name check. I mean, Tim Haywood, Andrew Winch, Lara Sessa, collabed on a lot of those and have done phenomenally well. So lots of the more traditionally styled limited editions are on the water. Then a few years ago, AMOLs decided to, again, they made their own pivot and they brought in Espinoino for the exterior of the AMOL 60 and the AMOL 80. And that might have been a moment when a few nerves or a few hearts were racing. I mean, when you disrupt or change direction from what has been a phenomenally successful run of boats, it is pretty nerve-wracking. But their bravery has been more than rewarded. The AMOL 60 has just been an extraordinary runaway success. And there's five AMOL 80s under construction. And it just seems to me there's another AMOL 60 poking out of a shed, you know, every couple of months. Well, I mean, there is. I mean, that's just reality. And the sixth one, with featuring a rather fetching hull color of its own, is making the news currently. So, yeah. Very, very canny marketing, very, very canny design from AMOLs, which is delivering them amazing results. So congratulations to all involved. And that brings us to an end of this week's Boat Briefing. Caroline, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
You're so welcome. I promise not to ask you to go to Gdansk next time there's some crucial boat international news to be dropped.
Be Siberia next time.
Siberia. Vladivostok. I have been to Vladivostok, actually. It's quite a cool place. This episode was mixed and produced by the wonderful team of Naomi Wilson and Adam Geese. It has been a production of Boat International Media. Don't forget to like and subscribe, and we shall see you next time. Thanks for tuning in.